Check in the microphone. So you do, check, check.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Bollocks.
Sapnin!
You are listening to episode 254 of Sapnin Podcast featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. And, oh, hang on, before we start, can you do me a favour? Can you let the listeners know what you're wearing?
Go on.
What are you wearing? Let them know. What are you wearing?
Formal trousers, formal shoes, a shirt, a suit jacket, and a tie.
Oh. What about me? What am I wearing then?
Exactly the same as me.
No, it's yes, a little different now.
Just do the fucking pun.
I thought we should get changed because...
Do it! Get on with it! Just stay casually dressed in conversation. I've done it. Anyway, this week's guests are Ryan Richards and Darren Smith. Of one of Wales's greatest ever exports, Funeral for a Friend.
Did you see my rain jacket when I came in?
Right.
It's red, because red is the new black.
Fucking hate you.
This is a very special episode, because October 2023 marks the 20th anniversary of the album Casually Dressed, and Deep in Conversation by Funeral for a Friend. I mean, this is one album that means so much to myself and Sean. It's literally influenced a whole generation of music from Wales, the UK, America, beyond everywhere within our alternative emo scene.
The world, like. But the world.
That would be easier to say.
The universe, like. The universe. As music goes... Because we only know music exists on Earth, you've got to say technically the universe. Well,
okay.
I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose. But every now and again, we like to do a little kind of album...
Look back.
And we couldn't miss this anniversary and not talk to the guys. We're very lucky enough to get some time with Darren and Ryan in their practice space that we're actually speaking right now. They're actually rehearsing next door. Yes. That is mad. Before they go out,
we should
on tour.
Give a shout out to Music Box Studios, really, because they did give us this room for an hour for free.
Yeah, so we do appreciate them very, very much. And obviously, Funeral going on this massive UK tour this week, celebrating this record. But so we had to get them on and look back at everything. Do you remember the first time you heard these songs?
Oh, these songs? Yes, I do. I was just enthralled with Funeral for a Friend from the start, to be honest. So if you've listened to any other Funeral for a Friend episodes, you will have heard that I missed their first ever gig, but then I went to the next five they did and become besotted with them because they were fucking brilliant. And then, this album came out and fucking somehow they topped what they'd previously done on the EP before, which I thought was impossible because it became my favorite EP of all time. So when this record came out, this year in, the quality of the songs, the writing of the songs, the aggression in the songs, the love... the passion, the intensity of the songs, it was just absolutely enthralling. And again, I was just proud to be Welsh and to lucky enough to say that I knew the boys. So what a record.
Yeah, when I started getting into this scene and going back through back catalogues of bands and discovering stuff, Casually Dressed instantly became one of my favorite albums of all time. It's just the amount of different elements and sounds, and the fact that there's so many different subgenres within this band, but it doesn't sound clangy.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like it's forcing. It's all polished. It's all absolutely lovely sounding. And as we've said, they've become so many people's favorite bands. So happy 20th birthday to Casually Dressed and Deep in Conversation. And throughout this episode, we're going to touch on so many subjects around that time and album cycle and them getting major record deals, writing the songs, how everything came about, and just some incredible memories and silly stories in between from the boys.
And some songs that might not have made it to the album that were potentially album openers.
Ooh,
it's interesting. It's a good bloody chat.
It is. All the secrets coming up. Just before we get into it, a lovely reminder to please go support us via our Patreon page at patreon.com/sapnin. If you enjoy this podcast, you want it to continue, that is the best way to help us make it each and every week. But you get included into a wonderful community of people that not only go to these gigs together, not only do they go to festivals, they chat to each other on the daily, they hype each other up, but some people in the group are in the music industry, including someone on this Funeral for a Friend tour themselves. We've just said hi to him.
Yes, the mighty James Hill.
Yeah.
He hasn't got two first names, like I've just said, so I don't know why I said it twice. Do you know what? He's so cool. He deserved to be named twice. JJ, yeah, I'm calling him JJ Hill from now on. James Hill, it was lovely to see him just now, and always good to see him. And yes, he's lucky enough to be doing front of house on this tour. Mm. And yes, very, very excited by it all.
So you never know who you're going to meet becoming a part of the Patreon community. That's patreon.com/sapnin. Go and follow us at sapninpod on Instagram and the app formerly known as Twitter. But without any further ado, let's get straight into the emo nostalgia. This is Mr. Ryan Richards and Darren Smith, A Funeral for a Friend, on episode 254.
Ow! Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Did you? Sapnin!
don't know why I did it in a high voice, but I caused him to do it as well.
That's all right.
I had to one up him.
I had to. I had to try and beat me, did.
Yeah.
God knows why.
I saw the confusion in Ryan's face every second, going, what is he doing?
I went all falsetto.
Yeah, we're very competitive. Me and Darren, yeah. In all walks of life.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I just have
if
to
If I
rise.
Do it high, he's got to do it higher.
Oh, that's the fucking best start we've had yet.
It's up there
brilliant.
100%.
Yeah, so our guests this week are Ryan Richards and Darren Smith of Funeral for a Friend. I can't stop laughing. Thank you, boys. Thank you for being here. I'm lost. I'm already lost. I'm crying, boys.
Now, how are you guys doing? I mean, it's a busy week. We're here in your recording space, practice space before heading off on tour. How's things at the moment? How's pre-tour shaping up?
Yeah, you almost got people excited then by saying recording.
I know.
Whoa, slow down now. Slow down.
Recording interviews only.
Yeah, there we are. But,
good though, yeah. Started sort of rehearsing yesterday, and it was splendid.
Yeah,
and as you can hear, our voices are well in tune.
Very strong, very strong. Yeah. We've stepped into the 21st century on this tour, where I've been on in-ear monitors for many years, but now the old bloody band is on them.
We've all followed suit. See, one-upmanship again.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Yeah.
If he's doing it, we got to do it, but you know, a bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
So we got nicer in years.
It's true. I got mine off Amazon, and they've had all his fitted.
Oh, so there we are.
But they didn't get his delivered next day.
True. Yeah.
No.
Not
no.
a prime member.
No. Yeah. Yeah. We've been able to all year ourselves, which has been.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
Indeed. Yes. Mm. Yes.
Because you can finally hear somebody hitting a bad note, or
it's like, hang on. You've been playing like that for 20 years.
That's wrong.
That's wrong.
That's the wrong chord, that is. That's the wrong rhythm.
But no, we've been able to address those things by virtue of hearing each other. So,
yeah.
Which will mean, obviously, it's going to be the best tour we've ever done.
And it is, the in-year thing. Like Ryan said, he's been doing it a long time. For the rest of us, it's been a bit of a game changer and sort of, just an awakening into this type of rehearsing and kind of playing live and being able to hear everything rather than just relying on the wedges in front of you that are not always kind of necessarily giving you the best mix or whatever. The in-ear monitor thing is a total game changer for us, I think.
Yeah, we've also changed over to amp profilers as well, to the Neural DSP Quad Cortex gimmicks.
The Quad Cortex, which is just a phenomenal bit of gear, to be honest. It's, and again, another game changer because, you know, just the presets and kind of the sounds within it are just incredible, you know?
Because Chris has proudly been sporting the worst clean sound in the world for the last 19 and a half years. So now you'll come along to the shows and you'll be hearing the intros to songs like Juno and stuff like that, and you'll be like, "Whoa, sounds nice to me." Sounds like the record, eh?
That is actually a clean tone.
Wow.
Yeah, so, yeah. Get excited about those clean tones, everyone.
Clean tone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, the Neurals kind of, like I say, the Quad Cortexes, yeah, they are just immense. Like, you know,
it's mad.
The sound is huge and just the profiles of the kind of, the, you know, the tones of the amps and it within them. Yeah, it's made everything kind of really clean and clear because you're going direct to kind of, you know, front of house and kind of, and then to your in-ears. And just it keeps the signal clear right the way throughout the kind of, you know, the whole mix, really.
And just using normal drums.
We tried to get him on the electronic ones. He wouldn't have
a minute. No. Who was the last person on the in-ear monitors? Was it someone old?
Chris.
Was it? He
yeah.
Was
it.
Old school. Was he playing the, I'm not doing that. Come on, no, I can. Because that's basically where Bob is.
You know him, yeah.
Oh, you met Chris, yeah.
Yeah.
Cheer up.
Exactly.
Yeah, because at the moment, like we are in an hour and about it for February. Apart from Bob, who's like,
there you go.
It's not really for me.
I think Bob's in a similar
the
sort
kindred
of,
spirit, empire.
Yeah. Thoughts like Chris, you know, he was all about, you know, amp heads and cabs and kind of miking them up and kind of, you know, proper old school, which obviously we all were kind of, you know, initially before the dawning of kind of the modelers and kind of, you know, and the modern kind of technology or whatever they've got now. But Chris sort of, I think, eventually saw the light. I think he went to see a show and there was about three or four bands playing. And I think three of them maybe were using amps and cabs and whatever, making them up. And one were using modelers. And he said the clarity, the clarity of them above the other three bands were just, was massive. Like, you know.
Everyone was like, Chris will be telling them, yes!
So he was kind of like, hey, I'm in. You know, that really changes perspective.
You have to let him get to himself, don't you? There's no strong arming into anything.
No,
he has to get there by himself. And he has. So I think if you put him and Bob on a little phone call or a little Zoom or something.
He'll probably convince Bob then,
Well, one of the very few times I've ever seen Bob happy is when he's been teasing Chris. So it would be nice to get him on a call just to cheer Bob up, I think.
It is a great source of happiness, in fairness.
But, you know, you guys seem very excited about this tour, and I think it's great to see. But, you know, we wanted to get you guys both in to really celebrate the fact that Casually Dressed and Deep in Conversation is turning 20 years.
20, but that's fucking mental.
Mental. Mm. Yeah, isn't it?
Obviously, you're celebrating it with this tour and everything. And I mean, we'd love to dive into that record and that era and everything just a little bit. But when you think back to this record and practicing these songs now, what's kind of some of the first memories from that time and that cycle and just being in that 2003 Funeral for a Friend?
Fucking hell.
I mean, yeah, for me, obviously we're talking now about the way we're rehearsing now and the technology that we're using and whatnot. It was very, very different back in the day where it was, you know, it was in Darren's garage and, you know, there was no real drums. I was literally playing, if anyone knows what a Boss Doc rhythm is, it's a little pad with, like, you know, kick, snare, toms and hats on that. So,
One of the earlier drum machines, really,
I suppose. Yeah. I mean,
not,
you know,
super early, but
I mean, we're still talking 2002 sort of time to when we were obviously writing the record. And, it was sitting here and it was sort of playing at this volume, really. So we're talking over each other whilst we're putting these songs together. And I'm sort of doing the beats with my fingers whilst the boys are playing at the sort of manageable volume. And I think a lot of it was the way that we wrote it like that, because as opposed to getting in a room and just bashing it out and being like super noisy, I mean, you know, the step before that was putting a cassette deck in the middle of the room, essentially, and pressing record and just bashing away and then trying to decipher it afterwards. It was a case of sitting there and actually, you know, being in a room, looking at each other, talking over it, and say, oh, hang on, just try that again and let's do that a little bit differently. And it was a real creative way to do it. So that's the first thing that always pops in my head, the Doc rhythm up in Darren's garage and the old cassette deck and all
methodical
that.
Methodical kind of way of putting the tracks together. I mean, I had my Tascam 8-track cassette recorder, you know, so I was recording them onto that, but Ryan became phenomenal on the Doctor Rhythm kind of, you know, little drum machine with his fingers. Oh, man.
He is Doctor Rhythm.
Including, you know, we're not talking just, you know, straight up beats. We're talking kind of, he's putting fills in there a lot.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Finger work is fantastic on Ryan, apparently.
Well, my first instrument was the piano when I started learning. So I think that was definitely part of it, because it's sort of like playing a piano in a different configuration, if you like, but the dexterity was there.
Absolutely, and very nimble fingers he had. Still has.
Oh, I have. Yeah.
But that, like you say, that kind of real almost guerrilla style approach to recording, kind of, you know, methodically piecing the songs together at that low volume, kind of really helped kind of us, I know, decipher what was good, what was bad, what was working, what wasn't, and kind of, you know, and helping the songs maybe be a bit more cohesive than perhaps they wouldn't have been.
Yeah, and that was the thing before me, because I joined after the first EP and I guess brought in that way of writing and demoing because I had that particular little machine and whatnot. And when I first joined the band, there was the boys had been just writing, just putting guitars down, so there's no drums or anything like that. And I remember, and I still got the cassette in the house. There was this cassette with just all these different ideas on them, which is gold when you go back and listen to it now, because it's so much that became Casually Dressed, and the Four Ways to Scream Your Name EP as well, because Escape Artists Never Die and She Drove Me to Daytime Television were two of the songs on that EP and two of the songs on that cassette. And I remember specifically Escape Artists Never Die, that idea being on there, all those riffs, but it was just Chris's guitar. And when you take away Darren's like melodic stuff on there, and you listen just to what Chris was doing, and I could see where Chris was coming from. He had put that song aside and sort of rejected. That was one of the rejected songs. Wow. Because it was quote unquote it was too metal. Because when you listen to it, just his riffs, it's like, all right, yeah, just those riffs on your own. But I was like, they're amazing riffs, though, man. This is amazing, and it's super melodic. So that was one of the first songs when I joined the band that we started working on, and then went up Darren's and did the whole thing with making sure that the beats weren't too metal on it. I could have gone in and played fast beats over that, thrash beats over that track, or lots of double kick or whatever. And then obviously Darren came in and added melody over there, and when we put that version of the song down, all of a sudden then Matt saw that differently. It was like, oh yeah, that's like super melodic, I can do plenty with that. And I remember him singing that chorus line, the wheel start a fire thing over it, and that song going from being, oh, we can't use that, it's too metal, to actually turning into what it did, which I think is a good sort of microcosm of how it worked during then with Funeral, and how we, that chemistry, really, feel like.
That's class.
Yeah, that sort of mixing of everybody's kind of influences and input kind of took it from being just one lone idea to being all of our ideas all combined, you know what I mean? And like you say, yeah, that sort of, those influences kind of turned the what was the original idea into something quite different, perhaps,
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I feel with Casually Dressed, it was such an influential album for a lot of people. Like, me and Sean absolutely love this record and these songs to bits. And at that time, did it feel like you were riding this mad wave of everything happening? Because it seemed to be that was the vocal point of things really changing for you guys, and signing to major record deals and just touring so much and going to the States and stuff. Did it feel like, oh my God, this is all crazy? Or was it just kind of one weird step at a time back in those days?
I mean, it felt to us, as it does, I'm sure, to most bands when they're writing kind of their own material, you feel strongly about it. You feel it's good. You feel it's great even, do you know what I mean? But that doesn't always translate to a wider audience or anybody even, a lot of people might think, oh shite that is, or whatever. Yeah.
It's not a party.
So I know we were proud of it. We were confident, but who knew what everybody else was going to be sort of thinking about it and feeling about it. Do you know what I mean?
Turns out you were right though, and everybody fucking loved it.
Well, it was received, as well as kind of we hoped it would be, I suppose. Yeah. So blew our minds then, of course, when you start getting that feedback. And the fact that, people are really liking it and even reviews and things like that, and even, like you say, kind of maybe major labels or attention like that, coming towards us kind of, it's very satisfying in as far as kind of what you were hoping and what you felt about the kind of material and the songs. Was trite, was kind of right, really, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, we've always said that. We've always talked about chemistry, about that being such an important thing with the band. And I just think the makeup of the band at that point, I'd been in a band with Darren for a few years before that. I'd known Chris for a good few years and, always sort of looked at him as someone who's, I'd love to be in a band with that guy one day. And And yeah, you know, with those two, you know, knowing both their styles so well, Darren and Chris, I think, you know, there was definitely this sort of a triangle between the three of us that started a lot of the ideas off, you know, and just sort of, you know, again, you know, the story I said about Escape Artists is a good example of that, where sort of us working on, you know, it wasn't always this way, but us three working on sort of getting those ideas into a place. And then, you know, when Gareth would, you know, Gareth come in on the bass and, you know, he wasn't into metal, you know, and he wasn't into hardcore and he wasn't into punk, you know, he just came from, you know, his favorite band was Coldplay and stuff like that. And he just came in and it was always from the most melodic sense that was possible, really, and bringing that in and wanting to make that other songs. And then obviously Matt then being, you know, having the voice but coming from a punk rock side of things and having that, having the melody but also having that sort of energy behind it and that sort of punk rock spirit. I think, yeah, just the whole thing together, it felt like we were doing something really, really exciting. And, you know, I think that comes through in the records. It seemed, yeah, you know, I guess it does, but...
Yeah.
What was the recording difference like between Casually Dressed and, I guess, the EP?
Do you know, it wasn't massively different, mainly because we used the same person, Colin Richardson, who, you know, he took a very kind of, I suppose, kind of intense kind of approach to recording anyway. And he did that with the EP, and I followed through onto the album, I think. And he would spend, you know, such a lot of time just getting tones and getting sounds and things like that, you know. And that's, you know, the kind of perfectionist he is, really, I suppose. So for me, it felt like an extension of the second EP, really, to go and do that with Colin. I mean, for the first half of the record, we used even the same studio, you know, Chapel Studios up in Lincolnshire. So it felt like an extension of the EP, really, you know, and it was coming back together with kind of Colin, an old friend, kind of, you know, and quirky as hell and just an amazing guy, you know. And it was, it just followed on from that, really, for me.
I think the main difference for me between the Four Ways to Screaming Aim EP and Casually Dressed was when we were recording Four Ways, it was, you know, it was just those four songs. It was, we had this block of time to do it. And I remember it being, you know, quite near Christmas. And, you know, we'd finished our shows for the year and we were in there and we were doing that. And it felt, you know, just very focused and confined. And it's like, right, that's what we're doing. And I remember, you know, driving home that night from Lincoln and, you know, it's about a 6-hour drive or something. And we, you know, Colin had printed off a CD just of little rough mix of the four tracks. And I think we must have played it all the way home, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, four songs for about 6 hours.
On a loop.
On a loop. Because we were just, wow, you know, this sounds incredible. And it was a really easy process and a nice process. But then when we got to doing Casually Dressed then, it was in and out of tours, really. It was in different studios. It was back and forth. And it was, you know, we...
It was chopped up a little, yeah, between Chapel and London, wasn't it?
Yeah, and we were doing, you know, shows in between and stuff like that, and we were hopping from here to there. Mm. And you know, it was at that point then when we were recording that things had started moving for us and getting really busy, and obviously, you know, press and promo and all this stuff that we didn't really, you know, there wasn't a consideration before. So it was being dragged from pillar to post a little bit, and it was a bit of a different feeling, not just being, you know, it was no longer that we had just one thing on our mind like it was for the EP. It was like, all right, we got this and we got that, and we go, oh, we've just, you know, we've signed to this new management company. It's like, oh, and then we've right, okay, we're new labels, we're having these label you know, and it's so it was a lot more back and forth on that side of it.
Yeah, it became like a lot more intense, a lot busier, a lot more sort of I don't know, exciting.
Well, that's it. You know, it's not an entirely negative thing. It's there's a lot of excitement that went with that as well, because you know the EP was like, you know, hope this does well, hope people listen to it, oh, people will care. Whereas like with the record, it's like, right, yeah, people do care and people do expect. So it's got to be good.
Yeah.
But yeah, that wasn't a necessarily bad thing.
I think the one person in me kind of have quite a harsh look back on elements of it is probably Matt, anyone, because to finish Casually Dressed, he was pushed really hard with his vocals because we were running out of time to finish it. And I think it ended up, Matt was up in London for about a fortnight maybe and pretty much singing just constant kind of for that fortnight, for however crazy amount of hours a day or whatever. And to the point where he ended up becoming ill after it, you know. It pushed him to the absolute limit because we were running out of time. You know, he had to kind of try and get all the vocals kind of in before we did run out of time. And so I think his perspective of it is a lot harsher than probably our perspective, you know.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
How long did it take over the stop-start period to record the album?
It's a good question, yeah. I mean, it was so back and forth. It's
how long were you in at a time? Like,
we finished. We finished the EP just before Christmas, so that would have been Christmas 2002. Then, just before that, and then essentially we were back in the studio working on new songs. Then, pretty soon after, you know, after Christmas, I remember not having a great deal of time off for Christmas, and it was sort of, you know, back to the grind and get on with it and let's get some more songs out. And so I suppose it was about 6 months because we would have finished that. We would have had to have finished it before we went away because, you know, we had some touring in the summer then and we went to America then sort of end of August, early September that year for the first time. So the record was all done probably in the first, I'd say probably the first 4 months of 23. So it was like, you know, we had just got the EP done. It's like, right, need the album. We need it now. And we were straight in there writing it. And that period wasn't just the recording period. That was writing the rest of the album and recording it and getting it all done. So it was
I remember kind of us being in a rehearsal studio in London, in Putney, in London, which is where we did the showcasing for a number of labels at one time. But we were in there and we didn't have quite enough songs for Casually Dressed. We were trying to
we had nearly enough, no?
No, we were trying to kind of, you know, put together another couple of songs before we went to Lincolnshire for the first bout of recording, I think, you know?
Yeah, because we'd essentially lied to the labels this EP is great. How many more you got for the album? Oh, we got loads. Yeah, we got
absolutely tons. We have
too many.
You know?
Yeah, we got
too many. Yeah.
We got about 30 odd, I reckon. 30 or
3
40.
Albums worth.
You're not going to bundle any songs. We could lend some songs too, could you?
Yeah,
that's how many we got. Like,
I know. Yeah, and it was like that, and it's like, oh yeah, right then we'll. Oh, we'll pop up the studio and have a listen to those.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Oh,
boys.
Oh, we're away, are they?
I've said which day. That one.
that one you were going to say. Yeah.
So, it was really cramming. It was, you know, we were like, shit, we're going to have to write some songs. But yeah, and there were, again, these cassettes still laying about and loads got pulled from them. Just demos.
I mean, I think the fibbing towards the label, and it was fibbing, wasn't lying. That's too much of a harsh word to use. Fibbing to the label. I mean, I don't know. I think it was a case of you got kind of some major labels kind of interested, and sometimes you only get that kind of one chance, maybe, of connecting with our label and then, you know, putting you on the label, you know.
Have to lie.
Yeah, so you have to kind of
fib, lie.
Grab that opportunity, even if it takes a little bit of fibbing. Then you may, you know, and it was a case of that more than anything. It was a case of, right, well, they're interested. Let's make sure they stay interested and want us by telling them we got more songs than we actually have.
Any young bands listening want to make
but at
it?
The same
just
time,
lie.
fib.
Yeah.
But at the same time, to be honest, I think we were all pretty sort of confident in our chemistry, whether we could put pretty decent songs together quite quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Once, you know, anytime we put our minds to it, we did come up with a lot of good stuff, and it was, like I said, you know, the chemistry was there. So we were lying, but we knew that, all right, if we, you know, if we got put to the test, we could back it up and actually make it work. I mean, that's what we did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We were banking on, you know, ourselves and that, that
we didn't know we'd have to do it so quick. No.
That creative, yeah, that creative kind of chemistry, kind of, you know, we were banking on that, kind of pulling us out of kind of any kind of dodgy water that Fibs might get us in.
Well, speaking of that, kind of the business side of it and record deals and all that, I mean, that is an element a lot of fans don't get to hear about. And I'm sure at that time, it must have felt like such a weird experience going from just writing these songs to then thinking, oh, all these major deals are coming in and, you know, you've got options and you're speaking to people. What was all that situation like? Was it kind of having to really sit down and see what people were offering and go from there? Because I imagine, you know, that's the side that you don't really look at when you first start getting into bands.
No, that's definitely a massive learning curve in regards to the industry. And we'd perhaps had the very minutest sort of taste of it, you know, in perhaps previous bands and things like that, talking to perhaps agents or something small like that, you know. But on a scale of kind of what it became, yeah, we were definitely kind of unsure of a lot of, I don't know, decisions or choices and what to make and trying to kind of work out, I suppose, kind of what would be the best for ourselves and trying to even get sort of some help from people.
Yeah, because we were definitely not prepared for it, just because it was just one of those things where it all happened pretty quickly, and we just hadn't planned for it. It was just a thing that we all used to do back in the day in South Wales is get a band together so that we can, you know, play on the weekend, yeah. Play, you know, whether that's, you know, in Newport TJs back in the day or swapping the circuit. You'd be at Merthyr Labour Club one night, or you'd be, you know, in Bridgend Football Club the next weekend, and you just do these circuits, and it became a social thing. Your friendship groups were doing that. They were making bands, and this was the fun thing to do. And all of a sudden, it got a lot more serious than that quite quickly. And it was, yeah, something we hadn't really thought about happening. So when it did happen, it was a bit like, ah, right, you know, what do we do here? How do we deal with this? And a lot of it was, you know, obviously there were a lot of genuine people who really, really loved the band, and those are the people that we ended up working with. But there was also a lot of, you know, because everyone else is interested, we better show up and come down, and they'd just sort of turn up and not know anything about the band, okay, and just sit there and be like, oh, you know, all right, impress me sort of thing. And there was a lot of that bullshit, and you get to sort of figure those people out quite quickly. But
I mean, those showcases, yeah. I remember up in the Putney rehearsal sort of room, I don't know, there was maybe 15, 20 labels or something, wasn't it? Kind of came in. We did a quick 30-minute set for about maybe 3 or 4 labels at a time. So we just kind of did that one after another. And
I'm super uncomfortable now we're talking about it. It's such a rubbish experience.
Yeah. But you know, like you say, you know, and speaking to kind of some of those labels that were showing up, you know, some of them, like Ryan said, you know, didn't really give a damn about the band, really. You know, they were just there because other labels were there, and we were kind of, I don't know, a band that was being spoken of kind of within the industry and that kind of thing.
Yeah, they had to be there. Otherwise, their boss was wondering why they hadn't been.
Yeah. Essentially. They get a telling off for not being aware of that band or not. Kind of.
It's like, no, I did. Yeah, I did see them. It was shit. Yeah. Well, all right then. As long as
you were there.
Do you remember any of like the minor details of like the offers and what people were kind of like maybe offering you in one place compared to somewhere else where you were like, oh, is it worth this or is it worth that? Like,
for us, I think it was more about the people, honestly.
Yeah.
It genuinely was, you know, because we were, as I say, you know, we were so young and naive. It wasn't really, money didn't really come into it a lot in our immediate thinking. It was about, well, it was about two things, I think. It was about, you know, A, the people, and then B, looking at the labels and what bands that they'd worked with and what they were doing for others. And I remember when we started getting into conversations with a label called Mushroom Records, who at the time had, you know, Ash and Garbage and Muse and, you know, just really good rock bands. We were like, you know, that wasn't, it wasn't just a typical sort of emo or post-hardcore label or whatever. It was like, oh, you know, this is just rock bands. It's like, cool, you know, we like that. And then the head of the label there, his name was Corder Marshall, and he was looking to sign us. And we were like, great, this is all going in the right direction. Fantastic. And then all of a sudden then we had a call just saying, oh yeah, Corder's leaving the label. And we're like, oh no. It's like, oh right, so is this gonna mess up everything for us now? And I was like, well actually no, because he's been offered the head position at Atlantic Records then. And we're like, oh, all right.
You know that, I think.
Yeah. So he's like, yeah, and he wants to, he's going over there, but he still wants to sign you, but to Atlantic. And he's bringing Muse over and Ash, I think, from Mushroom. And then you guys, and then he's got his eye on this other new band called The Darkness.
And, never heard of them.
Yeah.
So, I wonder
whatever happened then, fellas. So that became then, all right, so we were excited about signing to Mushroom, which was, you know, a good indie label with, you know, good pedigree and good people there. It's like, oh, we're actually now we're going to work with the same person, but over at this...
And he was taking
label.
Most of his staff from Mushroom with him.
That too.
You know,
and
positioning them in the Atlantic. So we knew we had kind of a strong, you know, supportive team within the label then.
Which was ideal, really, because we'd have been happy to sign to this indie label. So it was Mushroom/Infectious. We'd have been happy to sign because we liked the people there. So this was sort of the cherry on the cake, really. It's like, we get these people, we get the team, we get everything, but it's also going to this major label setup now with this guy at the top of it, which was ideal. And I think once that came around, that was sort of, you know, didn't matter really where other people were offering, whether it be money wise or whatever. It's like, yeah, this is what we need to do.
Yeah, because also there was no bands that were necessarily gonna clash with, in a sense that we'd end up in a situation where, you know, there's similar bands to ourselves on the label, which maybe they're supporting more than us. I think we wanted to be that kind of, that style of band and unique to the label, in a sense, so that they would be sort of supportive and we wouldn't be sort of clashing in as far as kind of them making choices of who to support kind of in regards to kind of, you know.
No, and that was it. And we were that focus, and that, you know, we were... That scene was obviously heating up at the time in the early 2000s, and I guess we were that flagship act for them. And then I think it wasn't until really that they signed Paramore that it was, yeah, and that was, you know, it's like, oh yeah, these guys too. And we ended up taking them on tour when they were, you know, super young.
Yeah. They're welcome.
Yeah.
For everything they've gone now.
I'm not saying I'm like,
no, completely. We are saying that. Yeah. We are saying
that. Well, yeah, I'm just
feeling for friend. If you know Paramore. So.
Well, yeah, pretty,
that's what you get.
Indeed. So that was that, yeah.
And apparently, I think that was their first ever tour Paramore did, opening for us it was a Canadian headline tour.
Oh, over there. Oh, yeah, I thought it meant over you.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, over in the, yeah.
That was ages later. That was.
Yeah, it was probably. When was that? 2006? When did you take them out?
Oh, 1987.
Oh, yeah, roughly, yeah. But it was, I think, you know, they were super young. One of their parents were with them and whatever, and it was a headline tour across Canada, and they were the opening band. Yeah,
that's mad.
That I remember being in the first show that they played with us. I remember being in the dressing room while they were on, and I was just getting ready, and my drum tech came in. He's like, oh mate, you got to come check out this band. The singer's got an amazing voice. She's like, she's only like this, you know, little girl. And I was like, oh, check. I was like, wow, unbelievable.
She could wail.
Yeah, and you know, the drummer, I think, was even younger. And he was, yeah, just up there, just smashing it. And, you know, still plays in the band now. Yeah. I mean, I know he went away for a while, but it was like, yeah, something going on there. that is special. And
yeah. But they were all, so yeah, really young, weren't they?
Super young. Yeah. I think, she must have been about 15. He might have been, the drummer must have been 14, wow. 15, yeah. Yeah.
And that's mad.
Unreal.
Yeah, it's weird looking back now at that scene at that time in particular and seeing how many things just evolved and everything like today. But speaking of like that time, I mean, there's such a nostalgia and love letter to that moment. And you got to think, me and Sean talk all the time about those days of like bands like yourself, Bullet, Lost Prophets and stuff, just doing wonders in Wales. But that whole scene in America that you got to kind of experience at the same time was just popping off. Was it mad flying back and forth and stuff and seeing the difference between the scenes and the different bands and who was doing well where and just kind of experiencing it all through your own eyes?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think it was a great time, as you just mentioned, and it was an exciting time, definitely. I mean, there was elements of definitely, looking at kind of who's doing what and things like that to a certain degree. But also, I think because we were so incredibly busy, it was almost like we were stuck in our own bubble, and it was just kind of us and our crew majority of the time, together constantly, and you kind of didn't notice kind of a lot of the rest of the world at times. Do you know what I mean? Once you were in that kind of flow, especially with, like you say, flying back and forth here and there, and some of the tours we were doing in perhaps in the States, it would be 3 months long over there or whatever, you become accustomed to kind of, just your little bubble then, and everything else outside it kind of not isn't important, but you don't kind of take knowledge, note of things so much, I don't think, perhaps.
No, totally. And it's there's definitely been a lot of looking back for me this year, being the 20th anniversary for a lot of reasons, really, because my sort of full-time job now is in management. And I was over in New York a couple of weeks ago because I had some bands of mine were playing over there. And I went to Holding Absence are out there on tour with Senses Fail at the moment. And obviously Senses Fail are a band that we played with, quite a lot back in the day. But the New York show out there that they were playing was at Irvine Plaza, which is the first New York show that we ever played out there was in Irvine Plaza. I think it was maybe like our sort of third ever US show. I remember we started in like Rhode Island and came over to like New Haven, and then it was the New York show. And I hadn't been there for so long to this venue. And as I was walking up there and I was talking to Lucas from Holding Absence, I was like, it was about 20 years ago around about when, this is the first place we ever played here. And I was like, oh, wow, yeah. I was like, I was like, I'll check on my phone now, actually. I'll check on my phone how long ago it was. And it was 2 days out from being 20 years to the day.
Wow.
Of playing there. It was two days out. Yeah. We played there with, this is From Autumn to Ashes headlining, and it was Cave In, Every Time I Die in Us, which is, you know, insane bill. But
sounds crap. I didn't see that. Like,
yeah, it was rubbish.
Terrible bill.
But yeah, for it to be almost to the day, you know, that's nuts. That was quite wild. Yeah, and funnily enough, I was at the show, and so I don't know if I ever told you this, Darren, but when I was at the show, and some guy came up to me with a Funeral for a Friend t-shirt on and sort of recognized me in the crowd. And he's like,
you met my mom 20 years ago.
Oh, no!
Son!
He was quite a handsome fella. He's quite short, though. So, hang on.
Weird American Welsh accent, even though he'd never been to Wales. It's not strange, isn't it? It's just unnaturally in him. Like.
No, it was.
It's mad, though.
That was quite a mad one, yeah. But thing, you know, things like that. Just like, whoa, yeah, 20 years, it sort of brings out the sharper focus.
But does it feel like at the same time, does it feel like, because none of this feels like 20 years for me,
no,
from the outside, so does it feel like 20 years for you?
In some ways it does, when you reflect and you start looking back on kind of what's happened, in the, you know, and you think, oh, yeah. it's about 20 years, isn't it? Then in other situations or in other ways, it seems like it's flown by and gone super quick, you know? And I don't know, in some ways you don't feel any different how you felt back then.
100%. You know? I haven't grown up since my band took off, so I'm fucking 23 forever, sadly.
Likewise.
Yeah, it does feel that way, and you know, definitely when we're all back in a room together and stuff like that, you know, it goes...
Old banding jokes and all that start kind of coming out, and yeah.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't, you know, you don't feel your age in that environment, and I suppose you do a little bit when you're doing the shows, and everyone's that little bit older.
The aches and pains are there more so.
And the crowd as well, you know, where you're looking at the crowd and you're like, is that so? Oh, yeah, yeah, that's it.
Oh, my God, he got a beard now.
Oh, no, that's his son.
Yeah, that's mad, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's, but it's only in those moments, really. But other than that, no. I mean, especially then when we're playing the songs as well, it's just, you know, I mean, myself and Darren hadn't, like, Darren left the band in, what was it, like 2009, 2010, 2000, and then
2010,
I left.
2010,
yeah, and I left, you know, the end of 2011, beginning of 2012, and by the time we came back and did those shows in 2019, even that space of time, which was, you know, almost 10 years for Darren and not far off for me, that gap didn't feel very long. Especially when, you know, again, when you get in the room and play those songs together, it feels like not much time has passed at all.
Music keeps you young, and you know, you're not, you know, you don't have to grow up if you're kind of playing music, it seems.
Yeah, it's probably the same for you with a blacker, when you start, you know, someone starts a riff or a beat or whatever, and like, oh, there it is.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We rehearsed Monday, actually, in this very... No, in the room we were in. We rehearsed Monday, and we were decided to try a bunch of new songs that we hadn't played on the reunion show. I couldn't get over it. It was... Bob was like, I haven't got a fucking clue how this song goes. And then songs went, all right, well, we start.
Yeah.
Everybody knew it.
Yeah, you just...
Literally everybody knew it. It was mad.
Once you get sometimes that first couple of chords or whatever... It's almost muscle like you're getting it. Autopilot then takes over, and you're at and just kind of goes to that part of the fretboard or whatever you need to be.
Yeah, we were playing a song that had some sort of like, remember when people were doing like spoken word bits in songs? So yeah, there's a bit where I do some spoken word bit, and I was like, and as the flames, and it just came back to me like in that moment. I was like, I have no idea what this is, Gav. Here they are.
No, that's it. You know, if you'd asked me to write out the structure of a song on a piece of paper and whatever, I'd be like, no chance. But let me just sit behind it and play it, and it just comes together, which is
quite
magical, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Especially there's, you know, off Casualty Dust in particular. You know, there's a few songs that were very rarely played, apart from when we were perhaps playing the album in full or something. You know, so there's a couple of. A good couple of songs off that definitely had to kind of go back and kind of study a bit. And then, like I say,
well, a couple of them that wouldn't have. I know. Obviously, by the time you know, Funeral did those you know, final gigs at the time with playing Hours and Casually Dressed, then you know, we weren't in the band at the time. So so some of these songs now from Casually Dressed, me or Darren wouldn't have played for, you know, over
10 years,
way over 10 years,
yeah,
way over 10 years, yeah.
But still, I could remember some parts,
yeah.
You know, like I say, Autopilot. You know,
we remember them all by the time the show's coming.
Yeah. Is there any of those songs that weren't like singles or had music videos or anything like that when you're practicing now, or you see like a live reaction and you just think, oh, I wish maybe we would have pushed that, or we would have been like, would have had this own lease of life, or are you quite happy with how everything was put out at that time?
Well, probably Your Revolution is a joke, so we wouldn't have had to be in the video.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Just Matt and Chris would have had to stand it all day.
Nice and easy.
Yeah.
To be honest, I think back in at that time, you know, we had quite a lot of control.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were kind of choosing the singles or, you know, having a hand in kind of, you know, what was chosen as singles. So that was, again, going back to kind of, you know, choosing that label, choosing those people at the label, you know, helped with, really, you know, it was the fact that, you know, they gave a shit about the band and our music and were happy to kind of have us involved, which, you know, you hear the horror stories about kind of bands with major labels and they get no say in what singles that's chosen, or they're kind of, you know, they're removed from kind of discussions about kind of what to do with the album and you know, and what songs go on there and that kind of thing, you know. But we never had that, really.
No, we did. We had a good team. The product manager we had at the label went on then from the label to most of it, manage Ed Sheeran, which he still does to this day. And, you know, you see a lot of articles where either Ed's talking about him or he's there with him. And you know, and we still keep in touch. And I know that he travels with Ed basically everywhere. So, you know, to have that relationship, you know, I think that speaks to, you know, the relationship that he generally has and how much he sort of cares for the artist. And we definitely had that with the, you know, with the label as well. And in terms of the songs as well, it's, you know, it's funny because you were talking earlier about the fact that, you know, Matt got pushed to the limit on the record in terms of getting to a point where he sung until he could sing no more. And with the two of the B-sides on the record, which were You Want Romance and 10 Scene Points to the Winner, the only reason those two tracks weren't on the album is because they were sort of at the end of that list of the tracks that Matt was singing on the album. And by the time it got to those, that was the point where his, you know, his voice had gone and he needed a rest. So it was like, okay, well, we'll keep these two aside then for B-sides when Matt's better, because we need to go and print the vinyls, like, now, tomorrow, next week, whatever it was. So it's like, right, the ones that you got, those, you know, we'll put those in the album. And we were like, yeah, cool, that's fine. It's not like we were made to, but it could well have been that if those two tracks were finished in the same at the same time as the other tracks, they could well have been on the record.
Wow. Yeah. I think the intention was for him to go on the record initially, wasn't it? Until we were at that point where he couldn't sing them because, you know, he was so ill, kind of from being pushed so hard, I think, that we had to kind of, like you say,
It could have been very different because, I think at one point when we were writing that 10 Scene Point song, that it would have possibly ended up as the album opener, which I think would have made the record feel a lot different if it had opened with that.
Yeah. Very kind of, because it starts, you know, really metal kind of vibe to it, you know?
Yeah, it's a very, very metal, you know.
As opposed to Rookie, which isn't as metal, you know?
No, yeah.
Far more melodic.
It's a bloody good start, though,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's not, maybe a nice way to start a show as well, yeah.
Might be. we'll give the game away.
What I wanted to ask was, what did you see, if there was any major differences between, say, Mighty Atom and Atlantic, apart from the machine of it being being bigger? Was there any major differences?
K catering.
Terrible catering at my theatre, Molly. A monkey old sandwich from around the corner in the shop around the corner. No, I think kind of, obviously, my theatre was kind of not necessarily a full-time thing for the guys running it, was it? It was a part-time thing. I think they both had kind of
jobs.
Yeah, they both had other jobs. So they weren't kind of focusing solely on the label, really, and the studio they had, you know?
Well, that's where it came because, you know, again, I was in a different band at the time. Well, with Gavin Rich, actually, who are in the band now. I was in a band called Hondo McLean. And and basically, the old drummer in Funeral, then Johnny, who's now a promoter. I mean, look, it's so incestuous, isn't it? He'd basically met these guys who were like, oh, you know, we've got a studio and, you know, you should get some of your bands down there because Johnny was the local promoter putting loads of heavy bands on in South Wales. So he started to get bands down there, and the first couple he did were Funeral for a Friend and a punk hardcore band called punk rock hardcore called From This Moment On, and then Honda McLean. Then we went in there next as well, and yeah, just started recording us, and it just came from that really, where it's like, oh, the guy who was engineering called Alwyn, he did a few harmonies on the first EP as well, I believe.
Yeah,
he's like, oh, you know this. Yeah, these bands are really good. You should, you know, should put something, these out and sign them.
Something special about, yeah, these bands, I think. Yeah.
And they ended up putting out, you know, all three bands in the end. I don't know what happened with From This Moment On. So, I mean, they ended up not coming out with them, or I don't know.
Yeah, it was meant to be like a split thing initially.
Yes.
I think it was perhaps, you know, four songs each or whatever.
That's it.
Yeah, but it didn't end up happening. I think, not sure if they imploded in some way. And
maybe they split up before then. Or they definitely, you know.
Was that what Gethin was in them at the time?
Yeah, yeah.
So then after Gethin, it was Mev's then, wasn't it, eventually?
Yeah, yeah. So it went a different way. So that didn't happen. But Hondo ended up signing to them, Hondo McLean, and putting out you know, a couple of albums and stuff through them. So that happened. But yeah, it was just, oh, we've got a studio, but yeah, I guess we could put out some albums as well, so kind of came.
Yeah,
from.
I mean, even if it's just to get a kind of, you know, a head start, I suppose, which kind of they helped quite a number of bands to do that, I think, didn't they? You know,
sure, yeah.
You know, like Ryan said, you know, the local scene, which, you know, Johnny Phillips helped build definitely. Oh, definitely. You know, he was part of making the Welsh scene what it was. You know, definite. And kind of, yeah, his connection with them then led to then getting opportunities, I suppose, and connections to magazines like Rock Sound or Kerrang and things like that, through Owen Packard, who was connected to the label a little and was part of that sort of the whole setup, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, he'd started, Owen had started looking after us a bit at the start in a sort of managerial capacity. He played guitar in Earth Tone 9, and they were definitely one of the bands we really looked up to at the time, and you know, great band, and just these connections, a lot of those connections came from just these shows in the South Wales area, really, and, you know, Earth Tone had played there and got to know Johnny, and then Johnny had got to know the guys from the studio then, and everyone just started coalescing and connecting on all this stuff, really.
It was pretty cool network, kind of, you know, we had Jose as well, you know, JMG Agency, who was kind of initially putting shows together for us and stuff like that. It was a cool network, kind of, you know, of all these different people, really, that kind of, which, you know, they were part of, Mighty Atom were part of that kind of network, really. But, you know, we never foresaw kind of what was going to happen, I guess, you know, inevitably. But the difference definitely was, you know, yeah, catering.
That's what it all comes down to. But yeah. No, guys, I seriously appreciate you taking a trip through memory lane and sharing so many of these stories. But as we start to wind down on this conversation,
have we started then?
Did you press record?
Just a couple of a couple more quick things. I mean, we've talked so much about this record, but if you could kind of summarize it up in a few words, what does it actually mean to you individually?
For me, on a personal level, kind of And on a musical level, just incredible excitement and just an absolute whirlwind and a crazy period of my life, really, you know, that, as cheesy as it sounds, almost kind of that dream of kind of getting somewhere with music and putting records out and touring and stuff like that sort of came true. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In that cheesy form, I suppose. But yeah, just an absolute mad whirlwind of excitement and kind of and chaos, I suppose, of like we mentioned, traveling all over the place and stuff like that. Yeah.
No, it was genuinely life changing. It was I can't imagine where I'd be now if Funeral for a Friend hadn't happened and everything happened with us. You know, I definitely wouldn't be what I'm doing now in management and, you know, working in the music industry as I have since the last 13 years now since leaving the band. I wouldn't be there. Just wouldn't have seen the things I've seen and places I've been and people, you know, who come to be such good friends. Is yeah, genuinely life-changing, which is a good thing to celebrate, really.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Nice. Well, no, that's lovely to hear. And people would have a go at me if I didn't mention this last thing at the end. Obviously, since you...
How much money do you make each off the record?
Not enough. I need to have a look at the bank account, boys. No, obviously, since you guys have come back and started doing these shows again, there's always kind of been a question mark of, like, is every tour the last tour and everything like that? I mean, you've always said that you're kind of just enjoying it and seeing where it goes, but is there plans beyond this tour now, or is it again just listen to things if offers come in and figure stuff out if and when?
There's definitely no grand plan. There's definitely not that. I mean, you know, even this now, this tour came from just happenstance, I think, in terms of, obviously, when we came back and did the couple of shows, the fundraisers in 2019, it was, you know, that was going to be that, really. And we all agreed on that before we did the shows. It's like, look, you know, we'll do these shows for a very important reason, but this is not like a comeback. And like, right, you know, we all understood that. And like I say, you know, we played the shows and they were great. And we had an offer then to come back and do more shows because the demand for them exceeded what we expected, and we'd only played Cardiff and London, so we're like, okay, we'll play some other shows. But I think that would have been it and done, really. But then with COVID, then that ended up being, instead of it being early 2020 that we do those shows, ended up being, you know, sort of halfway through 2022. And then when you finish those, you're like, well, it's 20 years of Casual Dress next year. It's like, all right, so okay then. So that's how this has come around. It's like, well, it'd be a shame not to celebrate we're sort of in the groove somewhat now. And then obviously then you get to a point now where it's like, right, okay, that's done. It's like 2005 is 20 years old. So it's one of those where there is no plan, because a lot of things can change in the space of, you know, 2 years until the next anniversary. But I don't know, we're just keeping an open mind. If things come through that we'll just take everything as we have on its own merit. And it's just a case of, fancy that one, boys? Ah, that looks fun. All right, we'll do that. And that's as deep as it goes, honestly.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is kind of, yeah, no plan whatsoever in a sense. Yeah, and it's nice to kind of be able to kind of just do things now and again, really. I mean, you know, everybody, you know, within the band is at different places in their life, I guess. And it's easier for some of us than others, you know. But I'm happy to kind of play all the time, really, I suppose. And kind of, you know, when possible, kind of that everybody's able to do it, you know. I love it, you know. As I know Ryan does, you know. So we'll kind of see what happens, I suppose, is the easiest thing to say.
Well, yeah, it's just lovely to see you guys being able to do these shows and if and when it feels right. And I know this tour in particular, so many people are so excited. Even all the younger bands you got opening up for you on different dates are very, like Jesse from Dream State is...
She's over the moon.
Is counting down the days.
Actually, and she, she's cannot wait. Like, it's like Christmas for her.
Yeah, we're really excited about that as well, because as you know, that's always been something that we've taken pride in, is bringing out bands and introducing them to our fan base. And you know, we always did that when we were coming up and coming through, and definitely look back on some of our old tour posters with a lot of pride of seeing the bands that have gone on from those things and used that as some sort of platform. And and when we came back last year and we did those shows and we had Holding Absence and Static Dress on there, it's been obviously amazing to see those both those bands go on to greater things now. And and whilst we're still lucky enough to be able to go out and do shows of this size, it's great to be able to bring through bands that we're feeling passionate about now and give them the opportunity to play those shows. And I'm definitely looking forward to going out front every night and watching these bands perform. And still inspires me now, and still what I love doing to this day, working in the industry and working with new exciting bands is my passion. So I know we all feel the same about having these bands out with us, so it's going to be exciting for us too.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, that's what we did kind of right from the beginning. I mean, if it wasn't for us, there'd be no Paramore. As we said.
Or the Blackout.
Yeah.
Actually, the Blackout.
Sorry about that.
Apologies. Hey, the thing is, if it wasn't for that, they wouldn't be listening to this right now anyway. So well, anybody who's listening to this, everything you've just heard over the last 50 minutes or whatever is because Freedom for a Friend took the Blackout out.
Hey.
So,
yeah.
So this
true.
Exists.
So it's all your fault.
The Blackout's I count the Blackout's first ever big gig. We supported Film for a Friend upstairs in Blackwood Miners Institute.
Oof.
And that's what I count as our first ever big gig. And then our second then was supporting a band called Avenged Sevenfold in Manchester Academy. Don't know what happened to them.
But,
never going to make it.
Gone.
Never going to make it. Goths, like, never going to make it.
Here's well, never work.
No, it's never.
And stuff, isn't it?
If I was them, I'd start to sound more like Guns N' Roses, because otherwise they're never going to make it. Sounding like a Pantera, and they're never going to make it. Guns N' Roses, boys. One last question before we go, because I don't know if we've asked this on your separate podcast, but the weirdest venue you've ever played.
Ooh.
I once played a Bull Ring supporting Lost Prophets.
A Bull Ring?
Well, supporting Linkin Park with Lost Prophets.
Oh, well. Mine might be the same as Ryan, I'm not sure. We played a store in Philadelphia, I think it was. It was a Hollister store.
Hollister?
Was it dark? Because they normally fucking pitch black.
In some sense it was,
yeah. Yeah, not the way you were thinking. Yeah. Internally.
The store kind of got a bit demolished, didn't it?
It did, but they still gave us vouchers for clothes.
Something like $200 each voucher.
Wow. It's more now.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, you could look at every chat in America.
But it wasn't clothing that suited our...
No, very college preppy kind of clothes. Yeah.
So we spent them all on the most ridiculous clothes that we
silly
could
find. Sort of, I don't know, bright coloured shirts or...
Yes.
It was a struggle to find anything that went with my wardrobe, to be honest.
Yeah. It was a struggle to find anything in here that fucking liked it. Put the lights on, like.
But I remember shelves collapsing. Because kids were climbing up shelves
to dive off
and sitting on the top of the shelves at one point, and I remember them collapsing at one point during the gig. So that one for me sticks in my mind
a
bit.
That's a very good one. Yeah.
That was a random one. Blinkin' Heck. Some other dark ones as well. Remember when we played in Poland with Iron Maiden, and it was a big Nazi cathedral.
Oh, yes. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's the best type of cathedral, I think.
Yeah, well, it had the big... Well, we looked up and it's like, ooh, what's that on the ceiling? And there's a big, like, sort of massive swastika.
Swazi, like. Yeah. That's what you want to see when you go to church.
Yeah, it was all in like stained glass. Like,
yeah, it was... So that was weird. That was unsettling.
Yeah, it was like an old, wasn't it like an old bus depot or something like that?
Something, it was in Poland.
I remember us playing football in there because it was so vast, and it was a lot of kind of, empty space, but, And I remember us playing football with the Maiden guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And somebody saying, oh, yeah, this used to be where they housed all the buses or something, or trams or something like that.
Also, Poland has terrible chocolate.
Does. Potashi Maleshko.
Yeah, it's rubbish. Bird's milk.
Bird's milk? So it translates to bird's milk. It's like almost kind of like marshmallowy kind of stuff with a like a thin chocolate kind of outer.
Is that actually bird's milk?
Can you milk a bird? That's what it translates to.
Can you milk a bird? I didn't think you can milk a bird.
Sean, you can milk anything.
I suppose you can milk an almond. You can milk a bird, can't you?
So yeah, if you like the idea of chocolate pigeon milk.
That's your boys.
Flamingo milk. Oh, is the kids in glass houses fucking merch item there for you? Sell flamingo milk. Yeah. Pink milk on the fucking...
They might have on the merch desk a box of Potashi Maleshko.
They're welcome.
Potashi Maleshko by Wozniak.
Yeah. He disliked this so much, he's remembered every detail about it.
It was an in-joke with us for a very long time.
It's on the rider.
I think it did go on the rider at some point.
Oh, I'm going to see if I can get some for next Saturday and bring some along. Throw it on stage.
Beautiful stuff.
On the rider next to the signed photo of Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah, Johnny Phillips made us the Blackheads first rider. We had it once in Southampton. It was one small white t-shirt, a pair of marigold gloves. A used, and I said used, copy of Razzle.
Ooh.
And a signed photo of Jack Lugman, who played Quincy, which I have to this day.
Still got it?
Yeah, still got it.
Worth a lot of money now.
Love a bit of Quincy.
He's passed away. I think he's passed away.
Gav's got a few nice signed prints of Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah. They did have a few.
I don't know if they're authentic, but...
I love the venues, like, some runner must have gone, do they really need this photo?
Yes, we do.
Show us off. Get it fucking printed out. And you'll go to IKEA and get a frame for it. Unbelievable. What a job, like.
Yeah. Oh. So quick turnaround. I need to get on that before the day of the show. Unless Cuba Gooding Jr. happens to be in town. But
you got
to
go, you know, like we were talking about, it's going one up, going one further than, I don't know, the days of Van Halen and only having, brown M&Ms, and things like that, wasn't it?
For a yellow one, I do.
There we are.
I can't tell the difference, if I'm honest.
Well, colours, isn't it?
No, I mean, I can see the difference. But I mean, once it's in the chops.
I'd know.
No.
Do you reckon?
I'd know.
Bro, you look dead into my soul then, right? Dead serious.
He knows his M&Ms.
Oh, bro, this is another podcast, I think.
We have to do the M&M challenge at some point. But guys, thank you so much for taking the time. Honestly, really appreciate it.
No worries. Just can't wait for the show.
58 seconds, boys. Yeah.
Quick.
Matt will be furious now. We've got to get over here.
Sweet. Well, yeah, thank you so much. And we'll catch you at the show.
Thanks for having us. And yeah, appreciate it.
You're listening to Sammy Podcast.
Lovely stuff. Woo! Yes. Yes. That was the funny, brilliant, and lovely Darren Smith and Ryan Richards of one of Britain's most influential bands in the post-hardcore alternative rock scene, Funeral for a Friend.
Yes, we've had the majority of the band on for individual episodes, and we always say how much they mean to us, but be able to kind of do this album revisit and celebrate the 20th anniversary of Casually Dressed just meant a very, very lot to us. So thank you so much again to the guys. And remember that they are going out on tour playing this album in full starting tomorrow, Saturday the 7th of October in Manchester. You can go and see them in Glasgow, Leeds, Birmingham, Norwich, Cardiff and London, finishing off on Sunday the 15th of October. All the dates are going to be supported by Dashboard Confessional. I know we said about younger bands and how cool that is, but selfishly, I'm fucking excited to see Dashboard Confessional play some old songs as well. So that's going to be exciting. And there's going to be loads of exciting bands opening all these dates. Different bands at different dates, like The Nightmares, Dream State, Casey, Higher Power, Dead Pony, just to name a few. Go and check out all the details at Funeral for a Friend social media and on their website.
Yes, go along to this tour now, because as you've just heard, there are no plans, solid plans going forward.
So you never know. So please, please, please pick up your tickets this week. Go and see Funeral for a Friend. For the love of God, they deserve your love. And it'll be fucking fantastic. And Chris from Dashboard Confessional is going to be there with his fucking never-aging, handsome, beautiful face.
Very, very good looking in person. Go back and listen to episode 120, I believe, when we had him on. That's a mad sentence in itself. But yeah, I'm excited to go hopefully to a couple of these shows and just sing my absolute heart out to these songs. So incredible, incredible times. Go back and listen to previous episodes if you need some more faff goodness in your life. And if there's any albums or episodes like this you think we should do, look back at anniversaries and revisit anything, let us know at Sapling Pod on Twitter. Well, it's not Twitter, it's the app formerly known as Twitter, and Instagram at Sapling Pod. And of course, just a lovely reminder to thank everyone in our wonderful Patreon community.
The best.
You got to see quite a few of them this week at Misery Loves Company Festival, I believe.
Did I?
So?
Did I?
I imagine some of them were there. Am I making that up?
Yes. No, you're all right. I very much did. No, no, I did. I did. I fucking love seeing them as well. And yes, as Morgan said, they are fantastic humans. And yeah, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/sapnin. It's the only way to support us other than giving us £50 notes directly into our hands, which I'd just like to say nobody's ever done that.
That's mad, isn't it?
So if you'd like a special mention on the podcast, come and give me a £50 note into my hand and I will mention you on the podcast. Also, can I just say I had a Instagram direct message yesterday off an account called Sean from Wales, right? It wasn't me. I haven't got a split personality when I messaged him myself. And he asked me, did I want these three copies of an old Quran with my head on the front?
Oh.
So I said, yes, please. I said, where are you from? He said, Abertillery. I can either send them in a post or I can drop them to your friend Alex if you want. Do you want these? And I said, yes. And I said, how much money do you want from it? He said, nothing. Just mention me on the podcast.
Oh, well, there you are.
So that's that.
That's that. If there's any other 3Bs you want to give us for a mention at the podcast, let us know. We like free stuff and we like talking bollocks, so those two combinations.
If you've got a magazine with my face on the front, let me have you then.
Well, you're on there, so technically you should own it, really, shouldn't you? But
well, yeah, come on. You can't just go around taking everything your face is on, can you?
Well, my face isn't really on much, I don't
think. No, I know, but what I'm saying, like, how many people have got t-shirts my face on? I can't just go stripping people naked, can I?
Well, no, that would be
technically,
problematic.
That's my love. Technically, fella, that's my pair of pants in my face. On. We did pants in my face. Anyway, carry on.
If it has a description of this and all episodes, loads of names there that we thank. Normally, Sean gives them a massive shout out to the elite members of our Sapling Podcast Patreon community, but to be very transparent with you, I'm going to be doing it in a second by the magical powers of editing, because where we are, we can't get the names up and we don't want to miss anyone out. So
that's true. So check this out. I'm going to do this in my best Morgan Richards impression.
Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Lurie, Janelle Kasten, Paul Hirschfield, Tony Michael, Dilly Grimwood, Kelly Irwin, Scarlett Charlton, Natasha Morris, Emma Barber, Mitch Perry, Nathan Crawshaw, Nathan White, Amy Louise, Alexander Pembrookton, Kat Besant, Molly Malloy, James Powerbank, Jonathan Gutierrez, thank you for upgrading your Patreon, Jenny Robertson, Murray Grimwood, Scott Jones, Amy Dawson, Stuart McNaugh, Ellen Southfield, Stephen Aston, Caroline Robinson, Kate Puttock, Martina McManus, Louis Cook, Carl Penglebury, Danny Eaton, James McNaught, Jenny Munster, Jason Heredia, John and Emma, M. Evans Roberts, Craig Harris, Evan, Sean Foynes, Vicky, Emily Perry, Adam, King of the Goths Parslow, Kalila King, Ollie Ainsbury, Josh. Ladies, if you can't appreciate your fruit jokes, you need to let that man go. Crisp. Carl David Smith, Connor Lewins.
And loads of love to everybody there. As we said, patreon.com/sapnin. Please help out, because those people that we've just named and everybody in the description and everybody in our Patreon group are the reason you are listening to this, you cheeky, stealing sounds again for free motherfuckers. You do it with music. Now you're doing it with podcasts. Why have I got into two careers where I can't make money off the download? Why didn't I think about this before starting a podcast 4 years ago? Because I've entered two careers where you can't get paid for the work you've fucking done that thousands of people have enjoyed.
2 points here. I thought you did a spot on impression of me reading people's names, which is very good. Well done. Well done there.
Unbelievable. And, I even mispronounced some of them.
And secondly, I did see you shared the Deal or No Deal meme of someone opening a box with like a pound in it the other day.
Yep.
And that's when the royalties come in.
Well, yeah. So this month now, October. Yeah, we're in October. So in the next couple of weeks, I'll be having a PRS and a PPL payment through. And I swear to you, it's about £35.
Oof, all the hard work.
That hard work over 20 years of making music. All the bands I've done. All the people, other people's songs I featured on. And every quarter, I get around £24 to £35.
We should do either an episode or a Patreon episode where we actually dissect that and see how much you make for what song.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be interesting. I tell you
what, the top earner is normally This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things.
Oh!
Yeah, a lot of it's from like weird radio plays, I think, or like jukeboxes maybe playing.
Fucking man.
Which is strange, yeah. Because no fuck.
Well, if that's something you'd like us to dive into, maybe we could do something special. Who knows? But really appreciate being able to do episodes like this, and you know, just having the time of absolute legends. And anyone else you want us to get involved with, let us know at SappeningPod, Instagram, and the app formerly known as Twitter. We'll be back next week and every Friday with very special guests. But until then, have a jolly good time, keep your smiles up, and please never die.
Yes, go see a funeral of a friend. For fuck's sake, please. You never know; you might not get the chance ever again. This is a warning.
Sapnin!
That went quite well. Apart from the bit where I had to do the impression of you. But I nailed that.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.